Blog Talk Radio.
Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. Just got finished doing the first 40. Now, what the first 40 is our video show. We do the first 40 minutes of the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast on YouTube. So check us out on our YouTube page on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. How you doing, Ice Water?
I'm recovering, brother. Recovering from the first 40.
You don't want to miss this episode of the first 40, the February 19th. Rant, it was Rant City. Ice and Black doing rants on Major League Baseball. We may talk a little bit more about Major League Baseball and the scandal with the Astros. We're going to be talking about NCAA basketball, NBA basketball. We had an all-star break, which a lot of people enjoyed here in Chicago. We're going to be talking, we're going to start out talking boxing. We're going to start out talking boxing. Because we usually say that for the end of the show, but there's a big fight coming up, or Ice says there's a big fight coming up this weekend. We've been talking about this fight for a couple of months on the show. It's Wilder and Fury 2. Round 13 starts Saturday night. I'm going to have my fire stick ready to go and watch this fight. But you said you wanted to kind of let's give our predictions of what we think for folks who might not be able to see the first 40 in other countries, because we've got a lot of different countries that listen to the show on the podcast. But, of course, Fury and Wilder is going to fight this weekend. Fury says his strategy is going to be that he's going to try to knock out Wilder in the second round, that he's not going to hide from him. He's going to go blow for blow. He says that Wilder's not used to that. I tend to agree with that, but I don't think it's going to be that way. I would love it to be the three-round Hagler-Hearns fight we saw back in the 80s, or the Ronnie Lyle-George Foreman battle where they were just knocking each other out, but I just can't see that happening. But your thoughts about this fight, bro?
Well, I mean, I think that overall it's noble if Fury wants to standing toe-to-toe in the ring with Deontay Wilder, but I think he's blowing a lot of smoke. I really do. And I think he realizes that, but I think for some reason he might have a mental advantage on Deontay Wilder by getting him fired up and maybe have him create the same type of behavior in the ring that he did last time, where he went for the knockout because he was so frustrated, so angry, and wanted to just get it over with. But hopefully his trainer, Mark Breland, Wilder's that is, just talked to him and said, you need to calm down, you need to relax, you need to be more active early so you don't lose the rounds, but you also need to be patient. And I think those are keys for him. And I think on the flip side, when you think about Fury under the new Kronk gym management and Sugar being the trainer, formerly a nephew of Emmanuel Stewart's nephew, I think they're going to try to come out, cause some issues, cause some problems, kind of keep Deontay Wilder off his game and use the craftiness that Fury has in the ring. And he's quirky, but he's also an intelligent fighter and knows how to stay away from people. But I want to see if he's going to be able to do that with the extra pounds that he's gained for this fight.
Now, you kept saying that in the first 40. How much weight is he going to come in with? I keep hearing like 270, and that's pretty big.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said he's going to come in at 270. I think last time he came in 254, something, maybe 2.
Ooh.
I know I don't even think he was 260, but he said he's coming in at 270. Feels better. He's going to be stronger, he says. He'll take more punishment. So, yeah, I have no idea how that. He said he feels a good 270. He's going to be a feel-good 270, whatever the hell that is.
So overweight lovers in the house. Oh,
yeah,
feel good.
Push some heavy D.
Wow. Now, you said in the first 40 that because you keep putting up an article called the Golden Age of the Heavyweight. I don't really agree with that, but what do you mean by or what did the article mean about the Golden Age of the Heavyweights?
Golden Age didn't really mean that they're the greatest heavyweights of all time, okay? Let's be real about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is for the younger people. The older people know is that you go back to Ali when Muhammad Ali was fighting in the 70s and so many different caliber of fighters that every night you put on the gloves, you had to bring it. So I'm talking about the Ron Lyles of the world, the Jimmy Youngs of the world, George Foreman, Joe Frazier. Ernie Schaefer's, Ken Norton. Jerry Corey. Every night you had to bring it. So and an older Floyd Patterson. So you had to bring it because every night these guys were fighting hard. And then later on down the line was guys like Leon Spinks. But I think this article really kind of talks about it's been a while since we've had some very competitive fighters in the heavyweight division. You usually have one or two guys that have been real dominant. Or some guy was on his way, or you had an older guy like George Foreman coming back, which is kind of crazy to me that that even happened. But now this is at least you have three guys that are supposed to be legit. And you have Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, and now, of course, Anthony Joshua. So these are three guys that are considered to be true champions, if you will. And I think that says with some other guys laying in the background with Dylan White, some other guys. You even had Ortiz. Nobody wants to fight him. He's around. And so just a number of couple other guys that could maybe cause some problems. And I don't think it's been that way. You had that type of marquee talent or somebody, guys, fighters that were at least somewhat a threat to champions. You haven't had that in quite some time.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I'm glad you clarified that it's not the best heavyweights because I was thinking about when I saw the article, it's like, man, being born in the 60s and seeing the fighters in the 70s and 80s, man, I got spoiled with the heavyweight division, how good those guys were and how the quality of fights and things of that sort. And so I say this in tongue in cheek. I say the heavyweights are a bunch of bums now. It's like the Bum of the Month Club because we just got spoiled in the 70s seeing all those great heavyweights battle each other. I think I mentioned earlier about Ronnie Lyle and George Foreman. That was like one of the best heavyweight fights I've ever seen because each one of them were going after each other and just knocking each other down until one guy just couldn't get up from a knockdown. Please go see that. I might just try to find that on YouTube and post it on our page. And then they weren't heavyweights, but Hagler and Hearns, where I will put up that fight as the best three-round fight that I've ever seen in my entire life. And I remember when that fight was on closed-circuit television that I was too young to go at the time. But my cousins were going. I know Black Thor said he was going. He said he went. And he said everybody left the arena satisfied after that fight. Everybody, they felt like they got their money's worth. It was only three rounds, but those guys brought it. And I say this, and I said it in the first 40, I would love for this fight to be like that, where you got two big guys and they're like, listen, I'm going for broke. And Fury saying, hey, they robbed me of a decision last time. I'm not going to let it go to the decision. And, hey, he'll knock me down. I'll get back up, but I'm not quitting. I'm going to go after this guy. I would love to see a fight like this. I would love to see, you know, the drag him out, bang out fight. But I just don't think it's going to be that way. I think it's going to be round 13. Same thing. He's going to be a tactician. Like you said, I think you had the perfect word for it. Fury is quirky. So that's why I always say that he kind of doesn't look like a fighter, but he gets the job done. And I'm trying to figure out if Wilder has anything different to offer in the previous fights than the previous fights that I've seen. Because I will give Wilder this. He is a knockout artist. When he throws those hands, if you're in the way, you're going down. But I have yet to see him with, like, really good boxing skills. And I saw another article, Ice, that I want you to address, because I think Wilder is getting a little bit beside himself. And I guess they were interviewing him and say if Tyson was in his prime and he's in his prime, that he said he would just take Tyson out. I don't necessarily agree with that at all, because Tyson, to me, was a knockout artist but seemed to have more boxing skills than Wilder. What say you, sir?
I don't know who would win that fight. I really don't. I'll just say this. I'm still trying to blown away by the fact that you said Tyson had boxing skills. Where the hell was that?
More boxing skills than Wilder. More maybe boxing perhaps. Skills than Wilder. Now, he could bob and weave.
Right,
can,
right.
You know.
And right. So,
now, I know he got okay, beat by your you. Boy Buster, but.
No.
Buster
see,
had
you
skills.
Making, you're making it personal now. Look. I didn't say nothing about Buster Douglas. I just
but
said when Tyson.
Skills.
I did. He did. Yeah. He created the blueprint for defeating Mike Tyson. A lot of people don't understand
right.
it. He created the blueprint.
Right.
Not after that defeat, did Mike Tyson did not have an impressive fight or a recognizable win after that fight. And
right.
Buster Douglas showed you the way to win. But the point being is that, I mean, Tyson just, he went side to side. I don't think there's a way to say if Wilder could have defeated Tyson. That's a hard call. I think he can say that now because he probably saw what Buster Douglas was able to do, thinking he might be able to do the same
mm-hmm.
thing because he's a bigger guy. But you can say that now. But the fact that even entertained it is kind of ludicrous to me. It really is. Because no one knows. I mean, it's kind of like what we had. You said the discussion about Layla Ali being called out by the maid, our girl upset. What is
the
champion? Yeah, Miss Shields. She was upset because she thought she was being disrespected. Get over it, man. Two different eras. So, I mean, I understand about
mm-hmm.
Tyson, but I understand why Wilder said about Tyson because he's bigger than Tyson. He would not fear Tyson. He would bang with Tyson, and he thinks he could catch it. Tyson, on the other hand, is like, are you crazy? You know, it's just Tyson, just how he would think different. So, I mean, that's the fighter in him. So it's great talk. I don't think it's any disrespect, but it's just great banter between two solid heavyweight champions.
It seems like a lot of these younger athletes are disrespecting some of the older athletes. You got Ja Morant and Brooks. Disrespecting Iguodala and Stephon Curry before that deal went down in basketball. It just seems like the younger generation has no respect. Or they don't do their homework as far as that. But I think Tyson with Bob and Weave in his prime, I think he'd take Wilder out. I really do because, you know, Tyson fought a lot of guys that were bigger than him and, you know, you wind up yelling by the third round, Timber, and they're falling down because he can get inside you and go to work. So I think they were very scared. They were very scared. Some guys weren't,
but
and they just went after him. And he, but I think when Tyson fought Buster Douglas, Tyson didn't train. Tyson didn't even look at Buster Douglas as a real threat, to be honest. It was like a tour going to Tokyo, Japan. It was on the route to go somewhere else, and Buster Douglas took it more seriously, and he took the fight. He did have the blueprint, took the fight, and then Mike Tyson tried to go back to the reserves and win the fight the way he usually wins fights, and it just didn't happen. It just didn't happen that night.
I mean, I love it when they say Tyson wasn't ready. I mean, he got rocked. And granted, he said he wasn't ready. He got rocked, and he tried to get up. My biggest issue that nobody really talks about, too, is at the time when Mike Tyson was over there, whatnot, some of the trainers and the people that were working with him as he moved on the second part of his career, it just wasn't pretty. Because those other guys, the previous trainers, would have had him better prepared. I don't care what how he was.
Yes.
A lot of people, nobody talks about that. I mean, when I watched Mike Tyson, it was the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life. I've been watching boxing for a long time. And when the man in your corner, when your eye starts to swell up and they grab an ice bag to take down the swelling, anybody that ever watched a damn boxing match knows there's a metal piece called InSwell. You push it up against the eye to bring down the swelling along with the ice. When they put plastic bags with ice in them,
they had like was it a plastic glove?
Gloves or something.
Yeah, it looked like something like that.
Man, I said, man, this is shameful. This man deserves better than this. I was like, man, he deserved better. And it was pitiful because that let you know how far he had sunk in regards to the people that were around him, and they were just taking him for a ride. That really bothered me because, love him or hate him, as a champion and a professional athlete, he deserved better.
Yeah, he did. He did. We're going to come probably back to boxing if we have some time to talk about Mayweather claiming that he is the athlete of the decade instead of LeBron James. But we're going to take a break and come back and talk some NCAA basketball right here on Lagoon Squad Sports Radio Show. Welcome back to the Good Squad Sports Radio Show. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. I'm going to be talking some NCAA basketball. Man, I was expecting an upset, Ice, with Baylor, but they're holding serve, and the next game they play is Kansas on Saturday. That's going to be a barn burner. Kansas is ranked number 3. Baylor is ranked number 1. Gonzaga is number 2. But it seems like your boy, Asabuki, he is playing very aggressive. Did he look at the show and hear me talk about him, man? What's your eye test on college basketball, bro?
Yeah, as a book, he probably did. He heard you. I'm sure he did. He's dogging that, man. I told you, give him a little time. He was going to come around. They have a very solid team. I like them. lot going on. A couple things that really stood out to me, or stand out, should I say, is how the Dayton Flyers are playing. They're number 5 in the country. They are 24-2, and they keep finding ways to win. They're a very solid team, play good team ball. They should be a very difficult out in the tournament. Impressed by them. Also impressed by the way that number 7 Maryland is starting to come on a little bit. 22-4 overall. They're starting to be impressive. Then after that, it kind of gets a little crazy because two of my teams that I called out as to they should do damage down the line have faltered a little bit lately. Louisville.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Auburn as well has been taking it on the chin a few times. Not sure what was going on with those two camps, but for Louisville to lose to Georgia Tech was a little bit unimpressive. But we'll see if they can bounce back. A couple other teams that I think that they are up and down, but they are impressive at times. Illinois, they've been up and down. They're not ranked, but I think they're up and coming. And when you watch them down, maybe not this year, but in the next couple of years, I think with the nuclear coach they have over there, he's really going to have them in a better place. And, of course, Rutgers. can be up and down as well. 18-8 Rutgers, led by Ron Harper Jr., 6'6 sophomore out of New Jersey. You might have not heard that name before, but Ron Harper Jr. is only a sophomore playing well. I think they played someone last week, and he dropped 27, was a career high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of different teams, Baylor, as you mentioned, Oregon's around. It's a lot of good basketball. Like I said, it's hard right now because teams are dropping. Watch North Carolina, Notre Dame. A lot of tough games out there. And Villanova's trying to hang on. Butler's trying to hang on. Xavier's trying to even get back in the mix. There's a lot of teams with very good players. And again, as we said before, this March Madness is going to be crazy. Crazy, crazy.
Yeah, I was expecting Baylor to drop one to either Oklahoma or West Virginia. I don't think that happened. They played Kansas, and you were right last week. They're going to be playing some teams in their conference that if they can get past these teams unscathed, they're going to be the overall number one if anything else, if nothing else crazy happens. But it seems like Kansas is really hungry. They're playing really aggressive. That game is on Saturday. Gonzaga, I think they're going to cruise into the top four. They're ranked number second. San Diego State, if you heard me last week, you want to check out San Diego State. They are a good, real good team. They already won their conference. They are undefeated. And I'm trying to figure out who do you put in the Western bracket, San Diego State or Gonzaga? I mean, Gonzaga might be the higher ranked, so they may stay out west. But if you put San Diego State out in the Midwest or in the East or in the South, it could be trouble for them. But they've had a nice little non-conference schedule, and they've beaten some decent teams. The Dayton Flyers, they're up one and ranked number five. I think it's been since the 50s since they've been ranked this high. Duke is playing steady, and they are really kind of holding serve, but they're having a little trouble with North Carolina State tonight. But you never know. When Duke wants to play in 5 minutes left in the game, they will find a way to win. So we'll see what happens with that. Maryland out of the Big Ten. They're talking about 11. I want you to address this a little bit later after I finish. 11 teams from the Big Ten. And I want you to think about, is that justified to have 11 teams from the Big Ten in a tournament? You got Florida State. Penn State, haven't had a chance to watch Penn State play, but what I've been reading, they got a lot of experienced players there, and they're ranked number nine. Nobody's really talking about Penn State. They're ahead of Kentucky. Louisville lost to Georgia Tech, and I think believe Clemson, so they dropped six spots down. Villanova is making a rise. Auburn loses. Oregon, three places up. Creighton behind Oregon at 15. Seton Hall drops down six slots. West Virginia drops down three slots. Colorado drops down two slots. Marquette, if you tie up Howard, you can beat Marquette, and that showed yesterday. They play Providence. Providence doesn't have a real good record, but at Providence, they play real tough. Iowa plays Ohio State. They're ranked number 20, and Ohio State jumps back in the top 25, up seven slots from last week, and they're 25. You got Butler at 21. They dropped two slots down. Houston dropped two slots down. The three teams that jumped into the top 25, and you mentioned this earlier, you got BYU at 23, Arizona at 24, and Ohio State at 25. And the teams that dropped out, Virginia, which might be, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with Virginia, the defending champions. Michigan State dropped out. Michigan dropped out. Cincinnati dropped out. Illinois dropped out. And Rutgers dropped out of the top 25. So there may be a lot of bubble teams out there. But to me, you can't justify putting 11 Big Ten teams in the tournament this year. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, when you look at the last couple, it might be very difficult. Purdue has been up and down. Purdue is will be that 10th team. They're 14-13. I'm not sure how that's going to work out for them. I don't think they're getting the tournament. Indiana's on a bubble. They're 16-9. They played very difficult. Their schedules are up and down. They lost one. We had to find out what's going to happen with Ohio State. They're 17-8. My question is, are they going to win 20 games? That's only two more to win, but they have a very difficult schedule. They'll probably get in because people like the way that they started out the season real well. But then from there, you go Maryland is a lock. Penn State at 20-6, I think, is going to get in. Iowa's 18-8. I can see that. I'm not sure about Michigan State. They might just let them in because if they can get to 20 wins, they're 17-9 right now. They'll do because of the coach and the potential and the injuries that they have, they might get in. Illinois is fighting, 17-9. They're going to have to win a few more games. Wisconsin, 16-10. It's going to be a lot of tough ones. So right now I'm saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 7, 8. Because the question is, are you? Here's the thing. How many games do you need to win, or is it based on the eye test? That's the question you have to ask yourself. If it's based on the eye test, a couple more Big Ten teams may get in. But if you go by the records, Michigan's 17-9, Ohio State is 17-8, Indiana's 16-9, a lot of losses. Illinois 17-9, Michigan State. If they don't lose, win 20 games, do they still get in?
Right.
So the question is, are you going to let some of the mid-majors in that have better records, or are you going to go off the old boys schoolwork network that we know and go after teams that used to have power and may be struggling for some reason or another this season?
Yeah, that's my question. Will they give the mid-majors the nod? Because you have a lot of teams in major conferences that aren't really kind of, you know, kind of blowing the roof off as far as being impressive enough to get into the tournament. And those teams, who, you know, North Carolina, my dad even he texted me the other day, he's like, what is wrong with Carolina? When they lost to a last-second shot to Notre Dame, they lost to Duke last-second shot. I mean, they just can't close games. And so those wins that Michigan had against North Carolina, Ohio State had against North Carolina, I mean – now it's not looking like a good win for them, and will that be held against them? And so my thing is, the committee, if you want this to be competitive, you got to reward some of the mid-majors who have better records, probably played out of conference and played some good teams. Give them a shot to get in the dance, because some of these major conferences, the teams in the major conferences, to me, they just didn't earn their way in. And I know they played tougher competition, but it's like this has been a year of parity. And so reward a team that may have three losses compared to a major conference that have 9, 10, 11 losses. I'm not interested. Matter of fact, when I'm deciding on what game to watch, if you got two teams with losing records, I'm not watching that game. That's a waste of time for me. Or they got more than 9 or 10 losses, I'm not watching it. I'm not watching it. It's almost like, to me, watching a bowl game with a team with a 7-6 record or a 6-6 record. It's like a waste of time to me. They play in major, conferences, but it's like you didn't really have a good year. Why should you be rewarded when you can reward a mid-major and give them a shot to kind of shine, give their players a shot to be seen, and give them some glory and some money, by the way. So is it about money, getting some of these major conferences in because the fan base will travel and get you the money, or is it about quality basketball? That's my question with this whole committee selection. And I don't envy them this year at all. I don't envy, because a lot of major college conferences I don't think are going to be represented in this tournament, and rightly so, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, when you look at it, I mean, you just look at these conferences. Like right now, the number one team in the Mountain West Conference is San Diego State, okay? They're undefeated, 26-0. The team right below them is Utah State. The Utah State Aggies are 21-7. 21-7, they have a few more games left. So let's say they go on to win 25 games, and they're the second team in the Mountain West. Do they get in the tournament, and are they going to be rewarded as such? Or are you going to look at a team like Loyola Chicago, the Ramblers, are 19-9 right now? They don't have the best team in the world, but they were very competitive last year. Are they going to get in over maybe one of the Big Ten teams? How's that going to work out?
Right.
So these are teams like 19-7 out of Ohio Valley Conference is in the second. It's actually tied for the league. Is Murray State Racers? If they win 22 games, do they get in over a Big Ten team or somebody else like that too? So with all these different teams that don't have automatic bids, Bowling Green Falcons out of Mid-American Conference are 19-7. They've done played pretty decent basketball. I guess my question is, if these teams, like I just mentioned, these so-called mid-major secondary teams that do not win their – if they win, let's say, 21 to 22 games and some of the Big Ten teams don't have who don't win 20 games, will those teams get in over other teams that we've been mentioning from the Big Ten tournament, Big Ten conference, should I say? That's the key.
Right. Because I'm looking at – okay, Wright State. We haven't talked about Wright State out of Dayton, Ohio. They got a 23-5 record. I think they deserve a shot. You got SMU.
Yeah.
You got New Mexico State. You have East Tennessee State. They lost four games. Stephen F. Austin, 22-3. You know, they had a good showing in the tournament. The last time they were there. So, and you have some of the major colleges, they're losing like 9, 10, 11 games, and they're still kind of trying to rank them and put them, in the top 64. But it's like, it's not their year. It's not a good year for them. So why not give these teams like Northern Iowa and Utah State a chance to go in there and see what they can do, instead of the old kind of the usual suspects, so to speak. That's all.
I agree with you. One of the biggest issues you're going to find out, which is one of the biggest issues that this committee is going to have to struggle with, is looking at the conference. You mentioned the Big Ten conference. What about the Big East conference? Seton Hall leads 19-7. They're 19-7. Creighton is 21-6. Villanova's 19-6. Marquette's 17-8. Butler's 19-8. Xavier's 17-8.
Right.
If they get to 20 wins, how do you decide whether or not those five or six teams or five of those teams get in or don't get in over these mid majors? Because when you look at these teams at the Big East conference, you're finding out that they are literally beating one another up in conference play. So their losses are, they're struggling in conference, not outside the conference.
I think a lot of this too, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, is that it's going to count on some star power. I'm looking at Marquette with Howard. Marquette is 17-8, but Howard is one of the, All-American. Do you not put Howard, Marquette in? And so, to get that star power, because he's leading the nation in scoring. And so do you not put him in? Because they only dropped one spot after they lost last night. They got a tough game against. And if they lose that ninth game, do you give the nod? Do you drop them out of the top 25? Do they get the nod to get into the tournament? I've never seen a year like this where so many teams in the top 25 have so many losses. I've never seen this before. And watching basketball, maybe it happened, before I was born, but I've never seen these many teams in the top 25 that have five or more losses that are hanging in the top 25 and have not reached that 20 game threshold that we like to see teams win at least 20 games to get into the tournament. This is crazy. This is really, really crazy.
It is.
And it's not guaranteed that they will get to the 20 games based on their schedule.
I'm trying to tell you, you look at Marquette, their losses include they lost to Maryland, they lost to Wisconsin, they lost to Creighton,
mm-hmm.
they lost to Providence, they lost to Seton Hall, lost to Butler, they lost to Villanova, and they lost to Creighton again. And they still have Providence, Georgetown, Seton Hall again, still had to play a very tough DePaul team, and St. John's is no slouch either. So they're going to have to find a way. Again, your question is noted. If they don't win 20 games, do they get in? I'm not sure they do, even with Howard on the team. It's going to be a lot of questions. A lot of teams have been losing, and lot of wins by other teams that you didn't expect that are like, well, look at us. We won our big games. Look at us. Give us a love. And how the other thing, too, is the seeding. Dayton is number 5 in the country. What seed are they going to be?
Right.
What seed is Dayton
going to
be?
Will they be a 2 or 3?
Yeah, are they going to get that high? Or should we be like, well, we're not really impressed by them, blah, blah, blah. I think one thing we're going to have is that first four is going to be dynamite in Dayton, I think, this year.
Yeah.
First four, too. That's going to be something else.
Yeah. Let's take a break and come back and talk some NBA basketball right here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show.
I got love for the game, that's why I'm rhyming, always there in the booth. Never lying to the people, always telling the truth. I feel the bass in my chest and give power to songs. Girl ripping when I'm home, about the hours I'm gone. I can't help it, the studio with Paul V. at. Try to walk away from it, but it caught me back. Forgive my pride, bitch, I even quit my job for the one that I love to work. Music, recognized I'm an artist and spilling my game. Put my heart on the track and have you feeling my pain. Seen a lot of hard times on the way to success. When I'm mad, writing a rhyme is my way to express. Lay back and fall deep in the verse. If I was out in the street, yeah, I'd probably lay sleep in the hearse. It's nothing like when you on the mic tearing the track. Then you come from out the booth and start hearing it back. Everybody there love the sound. That's why they give you hugs and pounds. Now you know you was spitting it. You got the whole run vibing the same. You ain't doing this for watches and chains. You got love for the game. Game.
Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. We're on every Wednesday night live, but you can catch this podcast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just log right back here to Blog Talk Radio, the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show, and catch me, Ice, and Black Thor talking sports. It's our overtime show. We do 90 minutes here on the podcast. We do our first 40 minutes. We call the first 40 on YouTube. Check us out. Subscribe. Join us and get updates on what we're doing. If you have questions, things of that sort, you can always leave comments. Catch us on our Facebook page, either the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show or the Reality of Sports page that Ice has. And we're going to be talking about some stories he posted up. One particular story we're going to be talking about later, Ice, is a story you put up on the Black Athlete. And I thought it was very interesting, and I want you to talk a little bit about that a little later. But let's talk some NBA basketball. Of course, we had the All-Star game and All-Star weekend here in Chicago. It was cold in Chicago, but it didn't stop folks from having a good time out here in Chicago and going to different restaurants, going to different events. The NBA players did a lot of charity work around hospitals, different schools, different social service organizations. And so they really did a good job here in Chicago. I didn't get to go to any of the events because I was busy doing some other work. But the people I talked to who went to games, who went to different events, said they had a great time. And folks were really impressed on how Chicago did it. So big ups to Chicago. Probably going to be hosting that All-Star game again real soon because I know folks ate really good. And the groupies were out in droves. I think I sent you a Black a news story that groupies and folks and workers, professionals, were coming from all over the country descending on Chicago to earn that extra cash with the NBA players. And I couldn't get away with going to any of the parties, Ice, because I ain't 6'4". So you got to be 6'4 to get in some of these parties to act like you're an NBA player. I wish I was a little bit taller, as the rap song says. But give me your eye test on what do you expect when the games resume tomorrow in the NBA.
Yeah, well, you know, that All-Star game is all really it's nice. And if you've never been, I suggest you go. I had an opportunity to go to a couple. One particular way back in the day with in Cleveland with a top 50. I think that was one of the greatest moments I ever had in sports. And that's Kobe's rookie year. That was an amazing time and to see all of that. So all of the fanfare looks cool. I think too that Chicago should get a lot of love, the Chance the Rapper. The more and more I find out about that young man, a Chicago native, I like what I see. I like his demeanor. I like the way he goes about his business. I like his music. And he really put it down. He really came out, and he was pulling for his city, despite we know about the violence that goes on in Chicago and the things we've heard about from the press. But that young man goes out, and he promotes the hell out of his city. He's very proud of his city. And kudos to him and whoever was helping him with that, because he was almost like an ambassador during the weekend for the All-Star game. So I was happy for him because he seems like a pretty good dude. And hopefully he can bring back some more people can be a little bit more cool or relaxed in, or at least understanding about what's happening in Chicago. In regards to the season when we come back now, it's crazy. I mean, we look at Milwaukee sitting at the top of the East. They're up by 6.5 games over the Raptors. Then after that, it's kind of spread out a little bit. Boston is in the third slot. Miami Heat fell back a little bit. They're in the fourth slot. The Sixers are in the fifth slot. Indiana is in the sixth slot. Seventh is Brooklyn. Eighth is Orlando. Wouldn't that be ironic, though? Miami versus Philadelphia, 4-5. You know, I would love that. Jimmy Butler versus the whole team. Yeah, I watch every one of those games. I'll be watching, just sitting there watching like, man, this is what TV basketball should be about. TV made for TV basketball right here. I would love that. The Clippers have fallen back by a game behind Denver, who's number two in the West. Lakers still sit up top, number one. Utah is four. Rockets are five. Oklahoma City is six. Wow. Mm-hmm. Dallas Mavericks are seven. Memphis is eight. So it's interesting because you mentioned about OKC, and they're still finding ways to get in, which is kind of cool. Dallas, 7-8. Portland is in that ninth spot. San Antonio looks like it's a wrap for them. New Orleans is cool, but it's not going to happen, and it just goes down from there. But I'm excited because now the East is – Milwaukee has basically been proclaimed as the up-and-coming team and team that people think are going to win it all, but still I need to see what happens in the postseason. I'm excited by Toronto, by how they're playing without Kawhi Leonard. And some people are saying they're better than when they without Kawhi Leonard. I think that's a farce. But, I mean, the only thing about I can say is it's great in the post-regular season, but we have to show your game in the postseason, in the playoffs. So hockey, it's hard for me to get excited. Positioning is great. Don't get me wrong. The better position you're in, the better it means the more home games you get to play, and the better shot you have at maybe moving on. But this is like window dressing for me, unless you're outside the playoffs. The positioning for the numbers, for seeding is great. But I need to see what these teams are going to do in the playoffs. And no longer can you blame anybody else because the Big Bad Wolf is gone. Golden State is no longer around. So Big Bad Wolf is taking a year off. So now somebody else can win. So who wants it? And that's what I'm excited to see. So the Big Bad Wolf, the bully, is gone. So somebody else has to win it. The question is, who will that be?
Well, they're projecting that Milwaukee could win 70 games. What are your thoughts about that?
I can see that. I mean, they're playing good ball. The Lopez brothers are playing well. They're getting some support from other places, and now you're getting a push from Eric Bledsoe, which they haven't had in quite some time. They really need him to play well in the postseason. Because if he doesn't, then it forces a lot of extra weight offensively on the Greek Freak. So that's tough. But I can see them winning 70. But I might have to go back and look at that too. And I hate to keep comparing this, but do you remember the time when Toronto won, had the best record in the East?
Yeah, I remember.
Get out of the way.
They were also scared of LeBron.
True. I give you that. I give you that.
Terrified. LeBron punked him. That's I remember that. They were always cruising until they played LeBron. Whether in Miami or Cleveland, they just couldn't do it. They just
That's true. I give you that.
These are the teams that surprised me in the East. I didn't see this coming. Orlando holding that number 8 spot, that surprised me. Brooklyn, of course, Kawhi is out again, and they don't know when he's coming back. That surprised me in that number 7 spot. Miami really surprised me. I didn't see that coming. They're at number 4. And Toronto, didn't know that they were going to be this good after losing Kawhi Leonard, but they're the defending champion. They're playing with some pride. The other teams that surprised me that they're not doing as well as they should have been doing is Detroit and Wall is still not back with Washington, but I thought they would make a run and they would be in the top 8, Detroit and Washington, but they let Orlando and Brooklyn overtake them. The teams that surprised me in the West is OKC. They surprised me. And Memphis. Those are the biggest surprises. Did not see those teams coming. Memphis in the last 10 games, 8-2. And then OKC is 7-3 in their last 10 games. Did see Dallas in the top 8, but didn't see them that high. I thought they'd be hovering around that number 8 spot. Houston thought they'd be much higher. They're holding on to that number 5 spot. But OKC and Dallas are right on their heels. So if they go on a slide, they'll slide down to that number 7 spot. And if they're in that number 7 spot, they would have to play Denver in the playoffs. Or if they slide into that number 6 slot, they would have to play the Clippers, which I see kind of coming up and overtaking Denver for that second spot. But, I didn't see that coming. With OKC being in the top 8. But I did expect more. I shouldn't say I expected more from Houston, but I didn't expect them to be – I thought they would be maybe in the top 4. But to be at 5, making those acquisitions, and then now they're playing small ball, I don't know if that's going to work with these two. And have you seen the photo layouts of Westbrook and Harden? with the fashion and all that stuff. To me, when I saw it, they're not worried about winning championships or winning ball games. They're making money and they're having a good time. But any surprises in the East and the West for you?
Yeah, Memphis, I mean, I'd give you that. I think Memphis surprised me. Orlando, too. But like I said, I think that Orlando plays hard. I'm not sure how far they're going to go. They do play hard. Utah, I mean, a lot of people had Utah really high. They haven't really disappointed, but I find it that I still think they're missing maybe another piece. Everybody thought Mike Conley Jr. was going to turn it around, and they've kind of looked another way from the standpoint of they've even used him coming off the bench. So it's been interesting from that standpoint. Like I said, you mentioned about Houston. Them trading away Capella, picking up Jeff Green, and some other folks to play real small is interesting. They're going to live and die by the three.
The three.
They're going to live and die by James
Bad
Harden
move.
And Westbrook. Now, what I didn't realize is, I was looking back at some things, that Jeff Green was on that team in OKC with Harden, Durant, and Westbrook.
Yeah, that's right. He was.
Amazing. Wow. And Ibaka.
So OKC South.
Yeah, and Ibaka. Man. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but they're so small. They're so small. So, I don't know. That surprised me. I want to see what Boston does because Boston's in that third slot, and they have a lot of potential. But I don't think that they're as dominant. Nobody's really talking about Boston winning the East. You haven't really heard that.
No, you haven't.
When Kemba Walker's playing his tail off, kudos to him. But I just don't know. I don't know if they have enough. I think they were trying to make a trade for somebody big. It didn't work out. But we'll have to see how the rest of it plays out. And then even in the West, from the standpoint of I thought San Antonio would be better just off GP. I did. Mm-hmm. I really did. And I thought Phoenix would be better. But they haven't been able to turn that around. And I will say this, even though they're down and not playing super well, I think when it's all said and done, you're going to be able to watch. I think the Minnesota Timberwolves with that trade for D'Angelo Russell is going to be right on point. They're going to surprise you down the line. You can get them motivated.
I'm going to look for that.
You can get a motivated big fella with his one of his best friends that really learn how to play together. I think D'Angelo Russell has something to prove. I think he showed you that when he went to Golden State. And now he's with his buddy. I think it's going to be – they're going to be with the – but they build the right piece with the right pieces around them. I think they might surprise you and Black Thor and some other people as to what they can do over there. You know, so we'll see.
I want Cat in New York. Black Thor don't want Cat in New York. I want Cat in New York. I wouldn't mind Kyle Anthony Towns holding it down with the number 32 in New York. I wouldn't mind that at all. It's Black who's going to switch teams and follow AAU teams if Cat does that. But anywho, this is a story that we didn't cover last week, but I know you're close to the story because you're in Ohio. The Ohio State players facing rape and kidnapping charges. What are they saying about this case, man, in Ohio?
Well, it's a very tough situation because these accusations come down, and like anything else, they have to get all the facts, and I think they're trying to get those together. So, therefore, the indictments came down, or the charges, should I say. So they were able to – I think they were out on bail, on bond, should I say. So with that being said, Ohio State had to do what they had to do immediately. So they removed both players from the team. And it's a tough situation because people are young. You don't know what happened. It's almost like a he say, she say type of situation. But you ask yourself, why did athletes put themselves in the position that, like they were in? But that's easier to say. I'm sure we all, a lot of people have done things that's not excuse anything that people have done or whatever. But if nothing else, it should be a lesson to be learned for athletes to realize that when a young lady – I wasn't there, but a young lady says no, and it means no.
Right.
And it's just tough because you're in college and athletes and whatnot, and sometimes they get passes. Now they're in a tough situation with a lot of scrutiny coming their way.
Yeah, it's a tough situation, and, you know, I didn't want to really speak on it until, you know, the facts came out. But we kind of see this more and more on college campuses. And it's a sad situation where parents send their children off to college and unfortunate incidents happen like this. And for all the parties involved, I hope things come out okay with this and some healing takes place with this and some lessons learned from this also. Because you're right, when you're an athlete or you're in the public eye, you are very susceptible to, you know, pitfalls like this. And you got to really be careful because it can happen and you can find yourself in some tricky situations. So, you know, prayers to the alleged victims, the alleged people that are involved in here, the football players and their families, and hopefully some good can come out of this, and maybe it's a life lesson that some people need to learn that, like you said, no means no, and we need to respect other people's bodies as we go forward. It's not all fun and games, and in this Me Too era, it's really kind of sad that we're still having to go through this. I remember years ago we were reporting on stories about Baylor, important stories about Michigan State, and it seems like every year there's another university coming out with some of these things. I remember when Jameis Winston at Florida State, things of this sort was happening. And you would think we've come to a point where, you know, it would stop happening and people would really kind of be on the P's and Q's when it comes to delicate situations like that, but it still goes on. Let's take a break, and Isis, I want you to talk about a story that you post on the Goon Squad and Reality of Sports about the black athlete. I thought that was a great article, and so we'll come back and talk about that right here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. Back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. I think I'm going to get a vintage Willie O'Ree jersey from the Boston Bruins, the first African-American to play hockey in the NHL. I saw a documentary on him not too long ago, and then other documentaries that featured him. And the more I see and more I hear him talk, man, the more I'm inspired and so proud of what he was able to do. I know we're talking about this in Black History Month, but yeah, what he brought and what the work that he was working with younger people to get them in hockey, African Americans working in Harlem, things of that sort, and just the support that he gave to a lot of different people of color playing in NHL and in college and things of that sort. So I'm like, I know last year I said I was going to follow the Blackhawks, but I might get a Boston Bruins jersey with Mr. O'Ree's name on it just to represent for the culture, man. I know you know about him. This dude played with he was blind in one eye, didn't let anybody know, and was able to be a great hockey player despite his deficiency. I just can't say enough for the guy. And if you want to check him out, YouTube, there are documentaries about this guy. Just outstanding, man. It, you know, my heart just goes out to him. And why they took so long to put him in the Hall of Fame is beyond me. Any thoughts about this, man?
Yeah, it's amazing to see how Mr. O'Ree is finally getting some love after all these years. Many moons ago, when I was a sports writer, sports editor for a newspaper, I got a chance to actually meet him. I write a story about him.
Wow.
A long time ago. And he's just as impressive in person as he is on TV and whatnot. And just the fact of what you mentioned about the way his journey has been a tough one. It really was never about him. It was about him just wanting to play a game he enjoyed. And he wanted to have the opportunity to do so. And he really looks back on the individuals that were open to him being a part of that National Hockey League, giving them opportunity because everybody wasn't for him. And he talks about that, but he also talks about why it's so necessary to create opportunities for young people of color. And they basically dedicated his life to do so. Very nice man. So I can understand where he's coming from there. But, you know, it's just amazing, though. Like, a lot of things we did not know. We talk about black history. We did not know that Grant Fuhr, who is Canadian, was of African descent. as one of the greatest jockeys, one of the greatest goalies, in the NHL. But for a long time, and he played with Wayne Gretzky at Edmonton, and we never knew that Grant Fuhrer was a man of color.
Right.
Because he wore that mask. And nobody really talked about it until years later.
Right. Yeah. I've seen documentaries on African Americans and black folks in hockey. If you get a chance to watch these, I know a lot of brothers don't watch hockey. Watch these documentaries. It will make you so proud what these guys go through and what the black athlete in hockey still go through to this day. With the racial taunts and folks, there have been some incidents here in Chicago where folks have been thrown out of the arenas for their racial taunts against black hockey players. But speaking of the black athlete, man, you put up an article that I wanted you to talk a little bit about why black athletes shy away from black identity. Can you talk a little bit about that, man?
Yeah, found this great article on the Undefeated. I love that website because they're able to really get into things that a lot of people don't want to talk about when it comes to race and just from a different perspective. And the article is based on a book by Howard Bryant, who's been on ESPN a lot of times in regards to the talk shows and whatnot, and really has a different type of view. And this book is about, it says, Why Black Athletes Run from Black Identity. A new book looks at how stars who take public anti-racist political positions become problems. So, of course, there's Tiger Woods, where he says, I'm not black, I'm Cavalier Asian. That was 2000. You even had it in women's tennis, where Madison Keys said, I'm just me, I'm Madison. Didn't really want to connect with her side of one being a woman of color. And he just kind of goes through it where people like Michael Jordan, of course, OJ, where it's being said that when people make a lot of money, and therefore they're kind of told or suggested to them that they don't cause any waves. You know, so the owners, coaches, fans, and they'll get punished if they come out and start to say something in regards to a strong stance on race or some other area. So it's amazing because it's right there in front of us. A lot of times we don't look at it. I mean, no disrespect. You can look at who you want to, but look at Madison Keys. They said her favorite movie is Pretty Woman. Her favorite actress is Julia Roberts. If they ever made a movie about her life, she wants Julia Roberts to play her.
Wow.
But Madison Keys clearly has African-American features. She said, I really don't identify myself as white or African-American. I'm just me, I'm Madison. But to each his own, and it really just kind of goes into the deep-rooted issues, talks about Venus and Serena Williams, talks about some other things. One thing that I do find about, not saying that they've never she's ever said that she was not an African American, but I will say this: if I find it ironic how different Serena and Venus are in a lot of aspects, and you can date who you want to, but you really don't see Venus in some ways grabbing to her culture. She knows who she is, but I think a lot of it, even when her dating, and she can date who she wants to, but I find that ironic that maybe because the way that she was treated by other people was why she tended to do what she did. And that has a lot to do with it as well. But she's kind of very private and whatnot. But when you see certain things, you're like, wow, you wonder about different things. And different experiences go a long way. But this really talks about, this article talks about how some people walk away from their heritage as people of color, particularly African Americans. They walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at guys like Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. Everybody knows about him. And
right.
Great guy. He just kind of talks about where he comes from and who he is as a man of color. And if he's asked about it, he'll talk about it. But in a number of ways, a lot of people don't see him as a man of color. They say that about many of our athletes.
Right.
Yeah, they don't see that, and that's noted. But then if you really know that, that Dwayne Johnson's dad was one of the first men of color in wrestling, big time wrestling.
In wrestling, yeah.
He's one of the first people I've ever saw when I was a kid growing up, Rocky Johnson. I knew about his dad way before I knew who the hell Dwayne Johnson was or The Rock. But it just shows you that some people just do not, they walk away from their heritage because when they don't make waves, oftentimes it makes them, allows them to be more successful and they receive more more accolades and they receive more money. We only talk about OJ, but they receive a lot more things because they don't create waves, and those people with the purse strings are the ones that are willing to put them out there and let them be the face of their companies and whatnot because they don't create waves. So it's an interesting field.
Yeah, and I just put it on my personal page. That's why I appreciate Ali and the Kaepernicks of the world and the Kurt Floods of the world because they didn't compromise. But I'm pretty sure that agents who have black athletes look at that as examples. See what happens to you when you do kind of step out and you know, identify as black and you know, talk about different issues of what's happening in the community. It reminded me of there's a scene in Do the Right Thing where Spike Lee's character is talking to the character, I think his name is John Turturro, I think his name is, and he's saying all your favorite people are black or so-called black. And he's like, and he's trying to explain they're not black or they're not the same as black. You know, he said your favorite artist is Prince, your favorite athlete is Magic Johnson. He's like, well, they're not black, they're more than black. And so sometimes I think the black athletes, some of them feel like they have to kind of be kind of ambiguous about identifying as black because people see them as a sports star or a celebrity and don't see them as the people that they might run into or work with or associate with every day or what they see on the news or the negative side of being black, hurting their brand, hurting their profits, not saying this because you're going to turn off a segment of America or your public. But, the racism is out there. You look at soccer, you look at hockey, you look at baseball. I mean, you are who you are. And you can't escape it because if something goes wrong, you're going to be taunted like a Jackie Robinson, like a Ali, like a Jack Johnson. It hasn't gone away. And I was watching a documentary about Max Schmeling and Joe Louis, and it was talking about the same thing. Jack Johnson was the last heavyweight before Joe Louis, and his managers kept saying, you got to be quiet, docile, you can't, he was lighter skinned. So it's like, you can't let them know that you're black. You can't kind of act, you know, be yourself. And in some respects, Ice, we never got to meet the real Joe Louis because of that advice of in order for you to be heavyweight champion as a black man, you got to tone down your blackness. And that's kind of like, I look at society now, it's like the black man is so strong in its character and in its stature that there are just attempts to try to tone that down so much that they'll try to cut dreads off your hair or they try to feminize the black man, but do everything to get rid of that identity so you can be accepted by everybody. Thoughts about that?
Yeah, I can see that. You mentioned about Joe Louis. The sad thing about it was a lot of people of color and other folks came after Joe Louis. So many people call him a Tom because they thought he wasn't, you know, for the people. But what they realized is sometimes he trusted the wrong people and he didn't know the pain that people were going through. So I'm not sure that made the time. Tom, if you're unaware of scenarios, then you kind of go with what you do. And he was put out there like that. There are a number of other people. But as you said, Jackie Robinson was a hell of an athlete. He was a three sport athlete. But Jackie Robinson was not the best baseball player from the Negro Leagues. Well, Branch Rickey knew he was the one that could tolerate it because he was a man who had been in the military, didn't take a lot of stuff, but he could deal with the things that were coming his way. But that's perhaps why you didn't see guys like Satchel Paige get there, or Josh Gibson in particular. They said Josh Gibson would have broke somebody in half. He never got the opportunity because he had some mental issues, mental challenges. So, you know, if anybody should have went, everybody would have said it would have been Satchel Paige first. But they had to set the tone and have the league prepared and somebody that could deal with the things that were coming their way. And Jackie Robinson was the man for the job.
Sports update, man. Duke goes down by 22 to North Carolina State, bro.
Wow.
So North Carolina State might have tried to punch their ticket with a 17-9 record to the tournament.
Wow.
By 22. Wow. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get some questions from the Goons right here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. This is our podcast we do every Wednesday. We also do the First 40 on YouTube. Check us out. Go into a segment we call Questions from the Goons. So, Ice, do you have a question this week on a sports-related topic?
Yeah, we've been looking at, I didn't get the chance to talk about this on the 40 because you guys, I got cut off by my lovely machine. But where you thought some of the free agent quarterbacks would end up going this year in the NFL?
Yeah, I thought that, I didn't think that Breeze would come back to New Orleans, to be honest with you. I guess it's 1 year with a year option. But I can't see New Orleans being able to hold on to Bridgewater because those five games I think meant a lot, and he was able to put that on his resume. And I think teams wanted to see if Bridgewater could still play because he had a horrific injury, and it took him a couple of years to come back from. And I think teams really wanted to see whether or not he could come out and do it because remember before the injury, man. Minnesota was on their way with him at quarterback. They were on their way, and then he had that horrific injury, and that ushered in Kirk Cousins over there with the $80 million contract, which you never know what would have happened if Bridgewater would have stayed and what that Minnesota Viking team would have done. But the mere fact that he came in with 5-0, I think that I don't know if he's going to get the $30 million. That a lot of people say he's going to get paid, but I can see a team saying, you know what, he's proven enough to me that he took a decent team and won five games and put that on his resume. Hill, I guess he feels like he's the heir apparent, and I agree with Black. He said that maybe somebody's in it. I think you are Black said somebody's in his ear telling him something about he needs to be the starter of the New Orleans Saints, maybe his agent or somebody on the team, or they're pulling for him. But I don't know if Bridgewater is going to stay. I expect Tom Brady to go back to the New England Patriots. I think he'll look at some offers. However, the Raiders are trying to offer him 2 years, $60 million. If Tom Brady wants the money, it's there for the Raiders, but he wins no Super Bowls. I don't think he wins any Super Bowls with the New England Patriots, as good as the AFC is getting. And, you know, you got the new champion there with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't think Drew Brees is going to win anything in New Orleans. It's still up for grabs to see what the Panthers are going to do with Cam Newton, as well as what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to do with Winston. So there's a lot of things that can happen. And Dallas. I think Dallas needs to go on and pay Dak. This guy, instead of sitting out, said, I'm going to play a year and I'm going to bet on myself. I don't think Dallas could do any better. If they try to get Rivers, I don't think that's the answer. If they try to get any other quarterback, I don't think that's the answer. I think Dak belongs in Dallas, and Dallas needs to pay him. They got a bargain for a few years, and they got their quarterback. You know, whether you love him or hate him, that's the Dallas Cowboy quarterback. Pay the man, because you really kind of cheated him out of money when he was producing for you. And instead of sitting out, he said, you know what, I'm going to play because I believe in this team and I'm going to bet on myself. So for Dallas to be holding this up, I think it's just going to be worse for them. And I know Dallas Cowboy fans probably won't agree with me. Pay Dak and get him in and make him happy and get that team going, because you have a chance to win in that NFC. You definitely have a chance to win in that division. You'll be battling with Philadelphia, but you need to make hay while you can before those other two teams kind of catch up with you. Your thoughts on some of the free agents and quarterbacks that are out there?
Yeah, well, I'm going to start right there because, you know, it's real, everything is big in Texas. What's up, Bill Dak's paycheck?
Yep.
let me just say, I think what Dallas probably end up doing is probably franchise tagging him. Because as much as I think he's earned some of the money, what they tried to do with him, I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. I just don't. I mean, he's very good. He's solid. But the money that he wants, that's money that's reserved for me, that a guy that wins. We'll see. Maybe he'll earn it again. But I think I would franchise tag him to see, even for the next couple of years, to see if that's what they want to do. Similar to what Washington did with Cousins. I would kind of do something like that. What I'm interested to see what happens to Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers might end up in Indianapolis, and I think it's the wrong thing for them. I mean, I could see them going with even Teddy Bridgewater and having Brissett as the backup. But the thing is, though, Bridgewater is not a long ball thrower. He's more of a consistent type of thrower. Moves the ball around nice, takes care of the ball, which is fine. But interesting. I don't see him staying. I said it earlier. I don't see him staying in New Orleans because I think there's somebody's telling Hill that he's like the next guy. And Bridgewater's, we like you, Teddy, but you might want to go somewhere else. I want to see what happens with Tampa Bay and Jameis Winston. I think they need to bring somebody else in. They talked about Phillip Rivers as well. Somebody else in to battle with Jameis Winston and then see what happens from that standpoint. I would like to see that and see how that goes. So it's going to be real interesting all the way around the league. Another guy that I want to see what happens is a wild card guy. A lot of people don't think he's that great or whatever, but that's Andy Dalton. Yeah, I think Andy Dalton with the right situation can surprise some people. I said that. But he doesn't cause any drama in the locker room. You put a decent group around him, he can win some games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, you just sound crazy. I know your friends, your people over there are going to go nuts, but if it was cheap enough, I know I would talk to Chicago Bears, I'd talk to Andy Dalton.
I agree.
But
The
only thing with Andy Dalton, you have to bring some other people.
Right.
You got to
get some receivers.
Yeah, you have to bring some weapons in, and nobody's going to make anything with the current roster. You need to get another running back in there that can let Cohen go back to his role of more being a more receiver slash slot type player. You have to bring some
receiver. I like that.
Yeah, receiver. Freudian slip. Anyway, but So, but I think you have to do that. Andy Dalton, I think, could really be, if nothing else, he could be a solid backup for that team. Kind of give a little bit more veteran presence and share some secrets with Trubisky.
Yeah. You know what? To talk about the Dallas situation, if Dallas not careful, I can see Dak Prescott going to either the Denver Broncos or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I can see that. And I can see him fitting in both of those teams. I could really see that. If they don't handle this right, he's gone. He's gone, and then you got to find another franchise quarterback. And I don't even know who the backup is for Dallas, but if you lose him, do you bring in a Cam Newton? Do you bring in somebody else that's out there? Like who's the guy in Miami? Because I think Miami's going to let go Rosen and try to pick up a quarterback. Maybe they'll pick up Tua from Alabama, depending on how the draft goes. So the draft, I think, is going to really kind of tell the story of what teams are thinking about and what kind of moves they're going to make as far as these quarterbacks are concerned. And that should give us a better idea of what teams, what moves teams are going to make. Because it seems like the Raiders, they're not happy with Carr. They're not. Because every chance they get, they're looking at some other quarterback. And that must make him feel some kind of way, thinking that you're the Raiders quarterback and you're not, that your coach doesn't believe in you. I know we talked about this early on in the first 40, but Mayweather thinking that he should be the athlete of the year instead of LeBron James. And so I want you to touch on that a little bit. Do you agree?
No, because we talked earlier that there's too many other intangibles. In the ring, he's second to none during his time. But when you have so many outside factors, court dates and going to jail and so many other drama-filled situations that he had to face, I think it's hard to kind of declare him as the athlete of the decade. He's one of the greatest boxers of all time because of the style and the way he went about his business. But outside, he has some problems, which would not allow him, in my opinion, to be declared athlete of the decade.
I kind of felt like his persona of Money May kind of took over, and it just seemed like he was kind of gloating and putting it stuff in people's faces. And I agree that LeBron should have been, because in 10 years, Mayweather had 10 fights. 10 years. That's to me, that's not very active. And he picked his fights. Let's be honest. He picked his fights. He picked his opponents at really good times. I think you're right when you said in the first 40 that he fought guys and made them look ordinary. He picked Canelo. Canelo was up and coming at the time, but their camp wanted to fight Mayweather because they thought they had him, and he made him look ordinary. He beat De La Hoya. He beat some big-name fighters to get to 50-0. I don't think that – minus Conor McGregor, not a boxer. I don't count that as the 50th. And then the Asian guy that he outweighed and beat in the exhibition. But to be a humanitarian, I didn't know when you mentioned the first 40 that he gives food to the homeless, but the stuff that he does to gloat and kind of brag and things that overshines his humanitarian, him going to jail, all the negative stuff. And LeBron James, let's be honest, this guy played about 17 years. 10 of those years, he's been in the finals 8 times. That's 82 games a season plus the playoffs. And he's the media darling. He's the media darling. He could do some bonehead things, but he could do some great humanitarian things. Love what he's doing with these kids in the school in Akron, Ohio, and Kent State. Loving what he does around the country, donating money and his time. I was astonished when, you know, there is a YMCA here in Chicago, and he donated money to get the gym fixed there in like a gym and theater there. And I remember I was directing a play, and we were looking for a venue, and they said LeBron James put this together, and it's immaculate. It's immaculate in a neighborhood that a lot of people will probably, you know, don't think that things that great are in. And he was able to do that. So he doesn't even live here in Chicago, and he was doing that. And so I think if Mayweather kind of was more of a humanitarian, he could stake claim to being the athlete of the decade. But it's just more than what you do in the ring. It's what you do outside, how you inspire people, things of that sort. And LeBron James, Sometimes he doesn't speak out on social issues, but when he does, some of the things that he does to speak out on different issues, he makes his point, and you got to give it to him. You got to give it to him. He's done more that shows more than Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, a lot of people were expecting him to do it. And I think I put a video on that. Michael Jordan said he was focused on basketball and kind of blocked all that out. And I just thought that was an excuse to kind of save face. But LeBron James has put his money where his mouth is. And so I think he's well-deserved of the athlete of the decade. Any other question? We got about 4 minutes.
On you now, brother. I gave you my question.
It's on me. I thought I asked about Mayweather.
Oh, yeah, my bad. I guess that was that a question? Anyway.
Yeah, that was a question, yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's see. Do you think that baseball will ever come back to the point of including many African Americans as their primary players?
I think it's imperative for baseball to do so if they want to save the sport, because I think baseball is in trouble right now. And we talked about that in the first 40 with the Astros scandal. Baseball is in trouble. They're in trouble. And I don't think the story is going away. I think that they're going to retaliate, do street justice to these guys. Everybody's going to consider them as cheaters. And so I think there's a black eye on baseball. I think the commissioner right now, he's going to probably have to leave, because when you call a trophy that everybody's fighting for just a hunk of metal, then it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything, and then you'll have players just playing for money, which they do, but you would like to think that players are playing for championships. And so if it doesn't mean anything to the commissioner, then you can see that people will – and it's going to leak out to the fans, how the fans feel. So I know Black and Ewan went on a rant about – how, you know, they should stop whining and just play. But I think the fans are going to start seeing the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox, because the investigation is not finished with them, as cheaters. Of course, everybody still signs, but the way they went about it is kind of New England Patriots kind of way. I think they're going to have to get to the point where they're going to get African-American players, especially with the, I think, predicted in the next 10 to 20 years that, you know, with the CTE stuff, that baseball is going to be the next sport that they're going to try to kind of recruit more African-American males in. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it would be good. I'm not sure how many African-Americans are going to come back to it because I think baseball is somewhat fixated on bringing in individuals from the
Latin America.
Right below Latin America, yeah, because that's mm-hmm. their new pipeline. And then just the way that you see that so many of our little league baseball fields and these leagues are no longer in existence, even though they have some fields and some things going on, it's going to be hard because I think that the tide has turned. I think it would be great, but I'm just not sure.
All right. We got 90 seconds. I want you to think about this, though. You don't have to comment. Think about this. They took the title away from the Jackie Robinson baseball team in Chicago, but they won't do it for the Houston Astros. Think about that. Just think about it. That's our show for tonight. We'll be back.
You would do that, wouldn't you?
Check out our show.
You would do that,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
We'll have you think about it. Check out our first 40 on YouTube. And if you miss any part of this show, you can always log right back here to Blog Talk Radio for the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show, our podcast on Blog Talk Radio. We'll catch you next time. Later.
Dog browns I get overwhelmed, overjoyed, overstepped. My bounds on your touchy subject. Your waist shape's not what I date. It's you, my crew don't mind it thick.
Mm-mm.
Every woman ain't a video chick.
No.
On runway model anorexic. I love what I can hold and grab on. So if you burn it off, keep the flab on. We gonna stay getting our collab on. Girl, we gonna stay getting our collab on. We gonna stay getting our collab on.
Stuck on the things they say.